The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Brought to you by Standard Life, a life savings company for your journey to and through retirement.
With us, John Cunningham, Marketing Insights Director for BAM Ireland, Philip Ryan, Head of Content with the Sunday Times Ireland, and Regina Doherty, MEP for Dublin. Let's start with political matters. And according to the Mail on Sunday, Martin was warned Jim Gavin was a media dud. Fianna Fáil's leadership was hoping to make Jim Gavin its candidate without a parliamentary party vote and was aware he was a poor media performer before he was selected. And this apparently is what the internal review into the party's abortive presidential campaign has been told. There, John Lee's words, he's group political editor for the Irish Mail on Sunday. Philip Ryan, what was the fascination with Jim Gavin, if all of that is true?
And I don't even think he would have needed to be told that he was a bad performer necessarily. We've all seen Jim Gavin give many great post-match interviews, but it wasn't like he was a national orator or anything like that. He was a good Dublin football manager and member of the Defence Force. So look, it was all there. It wasn't a secret, I don't think. But I think the main thrust of why they wanted to go with him was they thought that the position had to be apolitical. And I think that Micheál Martin, in his view, and potentially he could have been right, we never really will know, was that people wanted to vote for someone who wasn't a Fianna Fáil member, essentially. They wanted to vote for someone that they thought is a respectful character, will serve the country well on the national stage and the international stage. And Jim Gavin seemed like a very impressive person on paper. So why not go with him? Now, in hindsight,
the critical words in there seem to be the ones on paper.
On paper, yeah. And then there's also Fianna Fáil has this ongoing Dublin problem where they don't really have a strong foothold in Dublin. And maybe if they had managed to elect the 5-in-a-row All-Ireland winning manager, people might have turned around and went, hey, maybe we will set up an El Fianna Fáil coming in the backyard somewhere.
Now, this is all part of the Fianna Fáil review into the doomed presidential bid, which, according again to reporting in the Irish Mail on Sunday, has been delayed. And some within Fianna Fáil, unnamed sources, reporting that they believe that it will be a whitewash. Regina, from your perspective, having been around both national and European politics, do these kind of reviews actually reveal anything of any value?
They do, right? So first of all, can I just pay tribute to Jim Gavin, because he wasn't just a good football manager, he was a great football manager. And in all of the chats that we're having about the politics, there is a real person, and just to wish him well, right? Because it can't be difficult or can't be easy from the last couple of months. I read this morning that it's going to be a whitewash. Well, a whitewash won't wash, because you're a normal backbencher or a long-time serving, you know, a constituency TD or senator. You certainly want to be able to have your views heard, and you know, some formulation of a kind of a tick the box exercise is not going to wash.
And does a parliamentary party meeting not cover that? Does that not give
it,
that?
You
know
what? It allows you vent. Some of these things go on for 4, 5, 6, 7 hours, depending on how, you know, harsh the topic is. But actually what backbenchers and what people want to see is change. But, you know, I think actually even the delay is disrespectful. And I only know this from reading, so this mightn't be true. But if one of the contributions that we're waiting on, or that the Fianna Fáil people are waiting on, is Micheál Martin's, well, then I think that's nearly gaslighting, you know, your parliamentary party and your membership. The members want to be heard. They want to have their views heard. They want to have the system changed so that they're more empowered. And if your review does all of that without pointing the finger at any one particular person, well, then that might be enough. But I think there's an awful lot other disquiet.
What can the review? I mean, we all know it is all in the public domain that effectively we had Fianna Fáil leadership who thought this guy will be a good candidate for many of the reasons that Philip has just outlined. They got that call totally wrong and got blindsided by his previous rental relationship with the deputy editor of the Sunday World. End of. Is there more to discover than that, do you think?
But I think, first of all, there has to be an honesty around that. And I don't know whether people feel there has been an honesty around that. We all know how things work inside political parties, right? But your listeners at home only know what they're being told. And what they're still being told is that, oh, there was a democratic process and, you know, all of that we know is nonsense. So there needs to be a little bit of honesty.
You could replace those headlines with Harris was told, Humphreys was immediately told.
You could start that with any. Right. So the honesty doesn't have to just be with any one particular party. We happen to be talking about Fianna Fáil. I think we all need to be a little bit more honest about how we approach things. I mean, there was a whole load of people rushed out to support, you know, our candidate in the first number of days, not just for the first time it happened, for last leadership. We need to be honest about the way things, but absolutely, and maybe I just am more of a grassroots person than the next person. we need to respect our members a hell of a lot more than we do, because there's a reason the membership in all of our parties is dwindling. And, it's, you know, up and until we do respect the person's views, their contributions and stuff, well, then we're all at a high.
But has it not always been thus that the party leader has a hugely significant power and influence when it comes to those kind of quasi-centralised decisions about candidacy?
The reason any party leader, and it's true of all parties, has such influence is because they're the person who dishes out, you know, the roles and the responsibilities. And everybody who's in politics wants to have more of an ability to be able to impact, you know, either their community, their constituents or national policy. That's just the nature of it. So, like, let's be honest about that, too. Yeah. You're not going to go against your party leader if you're looking for favour without having a real understanding. And sometimes that nuance doesn't exist in politics.
But there's also the sense, again, that the Trump, this whitewash, the fact that we know so much and the fact that so much is in the public domain, if there's any attempt seen to prevent that from being brought and verbalised, okay, the damage to Micheál Martin is going to be absolutely enormous. So I think that the fact that we know so much, if they're in denial of it, as you said, Regina, got to call it out and say it as it is. And the fact that we know so much, if there's any attempt again, I mean, the Billy Kelleher thing in the background, waiting all the time with the Garda, where are they going to really kind of acknowledge the fact that, you know, who had the conversations when, whatever else. So if they go down the route of trying to hide this thing, all it's going to do is to damage a man who's currently under huge pressure, which is Micheál Martin, the leadership.
Yeah, I agree.
Do you think he's under that much pressure?
I think there's, well, if you're to read everything, you're to believe everything you read in the papers, he's absolutely under pressure. And I think, again, that he's going to have to tread very, very carefully with regard to some, I mean, if I see another picture of Jim O'Callaghan side-eyeing people at different conversations, there's a whole movement here going on. My sense of it is in talking to people that in the medium term, Micheál Martin is safe enough, okay? In the longer term, it feels like it's over. And will he be leading the party into the next general election? It feels like he won't. So I think that there's a whole shift at the moment going against him. And if this review of the presidential campaign, which again, everybody with a nose in their face on the outside looking in knows they got it also radically wrong. So unless they put their hands up and say, we got it radically wrong, made a few really bad decisions, and we're going to own it, is this going to store up more trouble for them?
So was this driven then, in essence? I mean, will the review discover that fundamentally this was a fear that Bertie Ahern might actually end up being the candidate?
I don't think there was any chance of that. Like, there was this thing.
So why railroad in Jim Gavin?
Again, like, for the reasons that, and we've seen it from the person who was elected. People didn't want a Fianna Gael or Fianna Fáil politician in the Irish.
So that's, if you're Micheál Martin, why waste the political capital forcing in one particular chosen candidate when you could just let the process run and select the candidate? And worst case scenario, you don't win the presidency. And
well, they did have a vote. They did vote as a parliamentary party for Jim Gavin, and they had the option. And people did vote for Billy Kelleher.
Although Billy Kelleher's theory is that vote is, if you look at the numbers and the amount of people who were represented in that vote by being in cabinet and knowing on what side their bread was buttered, that had an influence.
But it was a secret ballot, so you could have voted whichever way you wanted if you were Dara O'Brien or Dara Cleary or any of those. And I don't point to Jim O'Callaghan thing as the next leader. I don't think that's going to happen at all. I don't
even
see what
with the polls running, 60% compared to...
Why does he deserve to be Fianna Fáil leader? What has he actually done? Like, he's deported a few Georgians and their kids since he got into office. Other than that, he's more or less implemented Helen McEntee's policies on immigration, buying the jets and all that. The last time he was given any kind of leadership role in Fianna Fáil was the Dublin Bay South by-election in whatever year that was.
21.
And what did he get? He got under 10% or something with his candidate.
But a very accomplished barrister, a very accomplished front-bench spokesperson on justice.
People,
and he's been very well on the opposition benches for a very long time.
He's proven to be, so far, an effective Minister for Justice, and about in Jenny's Law and other stuff that he's doing. He's getting stuff done. I think the fact that we're here already talking about the leadership is the bigger issue, okay?
Yes.
And whether it's Dara O'Brien, whether it's going to be Jim McCann, there's going to be a whole raft of people who are suitable leaders for Fianna Fáil. But what it's all adding up to is that Micheál Martin has now gone from being kind of king of the world to being a man under huge pressure. And he's, that presidential election thing is going to just tarnish what has been a great career, I think, for a long time. But it has unleashed the hounds now.
Yeah.
But back to your point again, ultimately, you can see the logic in the conversation being had about the view was that being Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael on their own wasn't enough for somebody to win the election. So if you had a Fine Gael or Fianna Fáil candidate like Jim Gavin with the GAA behind him, it gave him that extra access to a market that wouldn't normally be theirs. So there's a logic to it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can say, okay, that kind of makes sense. But ultimately, I think, well, we wait to see with the report. Let's give them the benefit of the doubt. The report may show that actually they did all their work on Jim Gavin. And actually, besides the fact that he wasn't particularly articulate and impassioned or whatever else, and experienced in this, there may be some other things that we don't know about. So I'd be saying, let's see what's going to happen when they issue the report. And if it's a whitewash, they've dug a hole for themselves they never get out of.
Could I answer the question that you asked insofar as that I think we know better. So when you make somebody your leader, you want them to lead. And I actually genuinely think that for all of the reasons that have been articulated here, Micheál Martin thought that Jim Gavin was the best, you know, and don't mind anybody else in Fianna Fáil who wants to be, but I've made my mind up that this guy, for the reasons that John has articulated, that he reaches a much wider audience, I think he just thought he knew better. So, okay, right, that now looks a little arrogant. So own it. Say I made a mistake. We'll change the rules. But, like, whitewash won't wash. So that's, as
what
a politician, I can tell you definitely.
When you look at the possibility, because we talk about the, you know, John was saying about whether or not Micheál Martin will end up leading the party into the next general election. For such a heave to happen, normally there needs to be a focal point. If you look at Enda Kenny's experience, the dogs in the street were barking Leo Varadkar at him for years before Leo Varadkar inherited the title. In the absence of somebody in that position, and Philip says it's not Jim O'Callaghan in Fianna Fáil, is it possible to heave him?
Sometimes issues, like, I can't remember who always said it, but it's the little things that trip people up in politics. This isn't really a little thing. It's a, you know, it's an amalgamation of a lots of little things that are making people in, you know, political parties be antsy. And more importantly, and we're not talking about this, is that the people at home who voted or didn't vote last week, their input has been very, very loud and clear. And nobody is talking about how whether we're listening to those people or not, you know. All I know is that more than one person will emerge, you know, when there is a vacancy. I read today's papers is that there's a group of people within Fianna Fáil say they don't need one person to be the stalking horse. Maybe they don't. And look, Mayor, I'm a Fine Gaeler. It's not up to me to be giving anybody advice or commentating maybe on internal Fianna Fáil stuff. But I do know from previous experience in my own party is that people who want to lead will step up when they're ready.
Of course, the one thing that the fortunes hinge on for both of the government parties to some extent is housing and the delivery of housing. And there's much in the news today about steps in that. And we'll come to that in a second. Before we do, Philip, one just question out of the final legacy of the presidential election. Regina was talking about the people in that election who were unhappy. That giant spoiled vote contingent, is there any way, and do you see any signs of the system being able to interpret what that meant or to adopt it or adapt to it?
Well, the only thing evidence I saw of someone trying to address it appeared to be Simon Harris when he came out with his quite strident views on, you know, essentially too much immigration coming into the country, people aren't leaving fast enough. That looked like some sort of half-hearted attempt to connect with those type of people, but with those the people who have those views and who were writing those things on the ballot paper and have all the fears and trepidation around immigration. But the reality is, and John Mooney in our own papers alluding to it today in the Sunday Times, that those people are not going to vote for Fine Gael. They're just not. They're outside of their anti-government.
But do you know what type of society?
Like, it's all a bit Mickey Mouse, all this stuff. Lads setting up new terrorist organisations to go running around. Like, it's all toy soldier stuff, you know? And it's not, at the end of the day, the immigration thing needs to be addressed and it needs to be done properly, because for years and years and years it was just treated as in, we actually do need people to come into the country. There's not that many people coming. Let's just let the system be as flat as possible.
Is this not all connected to the same thing? And one thing that struck me with the presidential election was that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael is the centre ground. They kept them, the centre ground is held. It feels like every time it happens, when you're 15 years in power, you lose contact, you lose the voices of the people. And there's a real sense of this kind of tone deafness, I think, this time again with regard to those on the margins who don't feel they have a voice. And that's one of the main reasons why Catherine Connolly is somebody that actually stormed into the presidency, all right? And you have to think, with all of the bright people that there are in both parties and all the advisors that exist, okay, would somebody not look back at this? Happens every time. When you're in power too long, you feel disconnected and all these things happen. The bottom line is, there seems to be a lack of bravery with regard to so much stuff at the gutter, getting things done and prioritising things to fix. I mean, the immigration thing is really kind of quite extraordinary in the context of, and we buried Sister Stan on Friday, and I chaired the Immigrant Council for 12 years, and all Stan ever asked for was that there be a clear, integrated, strategic plan with regard to immigration, okay? Make the rules really clear, and they've never done it, okay? And it feels like, again, they're starting to try and pull things together. And again, we need to talk about immigration in a hugely positive sense. But if they don't deal with it, you can see it now. What are they called? The Irish Defence Army now resurrecting themselves with regard to, you know, attacking mosques and people of colour. This needs to be just taken down at the knees now and dealt with immediately.
Mm-hmm. Well, we will come to that, because this is reports in many of the newspapers today suggesting, and I think, Philip Ryan, your paper has significant coverage on this, suggesting that there is a right-wing terrorist group that is in being hunted by Gardaí, and that is in the process of trying to gear up for terrorism using things like the ingredients to make pipe bombs. We will get to all of that in a while. John Cunningham, Markets Insights, or Marketing Insights Director for BAM Ireland, is here, as is Philip Ryan, Head of Content with the Sunday Times Ireland, and Regina Doherty, MEP for Dublin. The Sunday Indo is reporting, Regina, objectors are going to foot far bigger bills for judicial reviews. As I understand it, what the reporting is suggesting is that if I take a judicial review against a planning decision, at the moment the state will support me if I am victorious in that review. What this is saying is that from now on, even if I win, I'm going to pay?
I think the system that we have at the moment is that it's always apparently seen as in the common good to be able to test our laws. And so we will support you from a state perspective financially. We don't have this problem in any other European country, despite having to go through the same regs, you know, to get something built as every other European country does. And so we're doing something wrong. And it's not that we're making it too easy, but we definitely know that judicial reviews, multiple stages in planning, is causing an uncertainty in the building, which is causing people to go and invest their money and build houses somewhere else in the rest of the world. We have a 900 plus page planning law that we spent a number of years passing in the Shannon and the Oireachtas and the Dáil a couple of years ago. It now needs to be enacted. And one of the last parts apparently, is going to be the judicial reviews, which will mean that people who are still allowed, for whatever reason, take their case to court, have to be able to put some financial money out of their own back pocket if they really feel strong enough to take that case to court. And actually, that's one way of looking at it. And another way of looking at it is to say, let's not stop allowing a judicial review take 3, 5, 7 years in the courts. Maybe let's put a time limit on it. So if you still want to pay for it, let's make sure that the courts actually respond in a timely manner. Let's put a certainty around the objection process of 12 months, 18 months, 24 months, so that it gives the building industry the knowledge that either way, whether it gets a plus or a minus at the end of the day, it'll only take 2 years. And that in itself would give security. But my problem, and this isn't a criticism of any individual, any party, it's a criticism of the political system, because it's as true in Europe as it is true in Ireland. We take far, far, far too long when we recognise something that's wrong to fix it. And I don't know whether it's, you know, the permanent governments, I don't know whether it's just the bubble that we live in, that this is the way things happen and it takes 3 to 5. It's nonsense. We know exactly what's wrong in our planning system. We know what we need to do to fix it. We just need to get on and fix it.
We talk about judicial reviews, and I think there is a sort of a general sense that everybody understands the process. I'm not sure that everybody does, because it's quite convoluted. If I understand this right, you have the opportunity to object during the initial planning process, then the local authority will make a decision. You then have a subsequent capacity to refer that to Embarpenola and or whatever they now call themselves, and appeal again. And if that fails, you can go to the courts and say, go back to first principles and make sure all this was done legally. Is that how it works?
That's the gist of it. And in a case of Irish Water, who originally looked for a wastewater treatment back in 2018, and here we are now being told that we probably won't get that wastewater treatment until 2030, which means we will have no more houses in Dublin. That's taking far, far, far too long. And so if we had a 2-year window to say from beginning to end, at least if it was a no, it would only be 2 years at the end of the no and you could start again. Not 12 years, not 4. It's ridiculous.
And we had this conversation before I came in Dublin Chambers, in the council. And we did Erin come in presenting their plans, which are sensational. They really are really powerful. And you got the National Development Plan. They had to deal with 32 different regulatory agencies with regard to simple projects. And it's all done in a sequential sense. And you get through them all, you get to number 26, and somebody says no, you've got to go back to the beginning again. So in light of the fact that one of the greatest things this government has done, and gets to give them credit for, is the signing off of this National Development Plan for a 10-year plan and $280 billion, okay? The implementation and the execution of that is going to be absolutely essential. And this move today is just one part of that process. Because at the moment, the thing is totally strangulated. And I suppose from my
point of view... But does this tip the balance in favour of the wealthy and the powerful? Because previously, if I knew that I had the state as a backstop, I could say, I, as the little guy, can take a judicial review of this because I believe I'm being ridden roughshod across. Now what this will mean is, unless I have, what, €67,000 in my back pocket to fund a legal case, I simply won't have the option to do it.
But it's not about your... rich people, developers. This is a much broader issue here, which is that actually the bulk of the problems relate to the permanent government trying to get things done. Like, we all know if they don't build that water pipe from the Shannon to Dublin in 3 years' time, they might houses, Dublin will grind to a halt. And there's going to be trucks coming into our houses delivering bottles of water. If they don't get the Dublin drainage system thing done, the city grinds to a halt. And the reality is, with regard to the objections, and I'm not going to mention names or counties, but we know there are individuals in certain counties in the north, south, east, and west, who object to everything, all right? And they stick it in, everything that comes in. You could have somebody down in Kildare putting on an extension on their house, and this person up in Donegal, whatever, puts in the objection. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't work and it's broken. So I think that there needs to be a process to protect people from being ridden... What's the word?
Roughshod.
Roughshod, okay. But I think the bottom line is that we can't get distracted at the moment with regard to that. That needs to be fixed. We need to get it right so this country can have an infrastructure that's fit for purpose, and at the moment, it's not.
Do we need to be slightly wary about this, Philip? Because it isn't that long ago that Ireland's planning problem was not that it was overly bureaucratic and overly legalistic. It was that it was done through brown envelopes and people not showing up at council meetings.
I feel like I've gone back in time, you know, over the last few months. You have the budget that you're giving out tax breaks to developers to build apartments. You're slashing standards so we can return to the matchbox apartments of the Celtic Tiger. Irish Water might be doing a great job in your eyes, but at the same time, a part of the new plan is allowing developers build their own wastewater facilities as well. And let's see where that goes and what's the standard of those things are as well. And then you have this thing that our own political editor is reporting in our paper today, Jennifer Bray, that for the small few houses that will be left for people to go out and buy, for first-time buyers who want to make their first home, they'll be competing with the state, who will set up a €100 million fund to buy second-hand homes to put homeless people in.
Now, this is the front page of your paper.
Bidding war?
We'll come back to the judicial review thing in a sec. Explain that story, because this seems an extraordinary situation where people who are already strapped trying to find houses are now going to be competing with the state.
And with €100 million in their back pocket.
So explain.
So obviously we have a homeless problem. There's a lot of people on the homeless list who have claimed homelessness, and we're supposed to be getting some accommodation for them. So the new bright plan is, from James Brown, the housing minister, to set up €100 million fund so the state can go around. Now, the state does this already through acquisitions on local authorities and things like that, and of course the rent in situ scheme. But now this appears to be a different fund, €100 million fund, that they will go out there and they will specifically be looking at buying housing for single people, which presumably are apartments, and larger family homes for bigger families with two or more kids. And the only way you can look at it is that they'll be in the market. Some civil servant will be standing in the queue when you're queuing up to see the new... The house on sale, but they'll have a huge budget in their back pocket, and the first time buyer will be trying to scrape together the money under the ridiculously restrictive central bank.
Let me just understand this, because this seems difficult to grasp. So the reporting is saying in the Sunday Times, your paper, more than €100 million is now being earmarked in a dedicated fund for the acquisition of second-hand homes, which will possibly put the government in direct competition with first-time buyers. So I am in a queue to buy a house. And I am outbid in the purchase of that house. And I subsequently discover that the reason I couldn't buy that house is because the state arrived with its almost unlimited budgets and whipped
it. Yeah.
That happens already. That's not to be disrespectful to your story today, but that already happens. And you have county councils around the country who are bidding alongside private individuals for houses that come on the market. Because we're not building
forever.
Not to be disrespectful to them. Yeah. What this is people trying to come up with ideas that's going to fix the 16,500 awful high number that we have of people who are living in homelessness. We've got thousands and thousands of people on council waiting lists for 3, 5, 7 years. You know, we know we have a whole load of people and cohorts that we have to fix. The way we'll fix it is to build bloody houses. Yeah. And we know the blockages that are there. So can we just get on with fixing?
But,
and I read today, process, it's a bonfire on bureaucracy.
How do we justify purchasing houses using state cash out from under private individuals who otherwise would have built
you
that house?
You can't justify it. And I think the bottom line here is, when I read this, I kind of smiled. I said, that 100 million is fine. What houses are they going to buy? There's no house. Yeah. So to me, back to the point again about, if you had 100 million and added all the other hundreds of millions they've got all over the place and started building houses. Yeah. Now, I mean, we have, you know, you go back to corporation house, whatever it is, okay? It just seems madness. Now, I can guarantee if James Brown were here, he'd say, this is only one of 25 things we've done with regard to helping the housing process. And the bottom line is, they're not building enough houses.
Maybe I'm thick, but let me try this one more time.
Not really.
So what we are saying is, there is a certain cohort of available houses for sale that we know is not large enough to suit the demand. In amongst that cohort, the government is now setting up a fund so that they can become an active purchaser of those houses. The net effect can only be that private citizens who otherwise would have purchased them will find themselves unable to purchase out of that net amount. That's it.
Yeah. And then maybe they'll become homeless. And then they can get on the list and maybe the government will get them one. Yeah. I don't know.
How is there that? There has to be a subtlety in this that I'm missing. That this is
there, honestly, there isn't. And I say it, I absolutely believe that whoever came up with this idea was honestly thinking that they were going to be resolving an issue of the 16,500 people who are homeless and living in hotels, which isn't acceptable, and need a solution for them. The solution is to make strategic development, you know, absent from the judicial review process. Yeah. Irish Water shouldn't have to spend 18 years, 15 years trying to build either water or wastewater treatment facilities so that other developers can build houses. Mm. Developers are not putting their money in Ireland because of the uncertainty that exists with regard to our planning system. Fix it. And then, as you just literally mentioned, we have a whole system of financial rules that has a look back of 20 years that stops our banks being able to give money to medium and small developers to be able to build 10, 40, 50 houses the way they did in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s when I was a young one.
The people who want mortgages.
It's not rocket science.
The people who want mortgages, I think the central bank rules are very out of date. Like you can't treat people like idiots. Like if you take out the loan, you have to have the system in place. You have to pay it back. If you don't pay it back, you get the house taken off you.
No, I'm going back. I still don't understand this.
The problem in Ireland is that you don't get the house.
Yeah, that's
back
it, that's
off
what
you,
I'm saying.
Why like they have those rules?
Exactly.
But let me get this 100 million euro fund. Sorry for being pedantic, but I feel that there must be a layer to this that I'm not getting. If I'm in the market for a second hand home and I purchase that home, the one that I was in is now available for somebody else. So the net amount of available homes remains constant. If I don't purchase that home and the state does, all it does is mean that the amount of available homes in the private sector is reduced.
Correct.
So they're going to fund reducing available supply in the private sector with 100 million quid of our money.
But you'd have to assume the person that came up with this idea thinks they're funding to provide a solution to a problem that we get reported on every single month, and rightly so.
There has to be a reason for it. There has to be somebody. Nobody would do that without saying there is a layer in this. There's some subtlety. There's some loophole that we're missing.
Well, build more social housing is what you need to do.
And again, not wanting to go back. Sister Stan founded Focus Ireland 40 years ago this year. And I had a look recently at the original paper she published. And if it was published today, she's presented the solution for homelessness, which was really, very clear. So 40 years later, it's as relevant today as it was. And back to Regina's point, we're not looking for the cure for cancer here. It's as obvious as the nose or face what needs to happen. Where's the bravery? Where's the bravery? Where are the balls to get things done?
What do you mean bravery? How does bravery build houses?
The government leadership. Where is the bravery? Say, we're going to fix this. I mean, we've had how many conversations have we had about the housing czar and Brendan McDonagh going back? People know what needs to be done and it's not being done. And James Brown is doing his best. And I said, if he was here now, he'd show you a sheet of paper with 25 things he's done.
What needs to be done is having thousands of people able to build houses quickly, which we don't have. Where do we magic all these people up from?
The issue on the judicial review policy, that is a good policy.
Well, hang on, Regina says the availability of labour is not the problem.
We established a housing committee in the European Parliament probably 12, 13 months ago at this stage. Right? One of the frustrations is that they made us talk to ourselves for 12 months before we came up with solutions. We knew what the solutions were a month later. So again, the whole, the system is a problem, right? We talk to ourselves, we talk around ourselves, we talk to in bubble. Right, that needs to change. There are people, John is right, there are people within the Irish system that know exactly what needs to be done, but we have layers and layers and layers of bureaucracy that stops it from being done. That phrase today, we're going to have a bonfire on bureaucracy. If I actually really believed that, I would be as happy as a sandboy. Honest to goodness, right? So, like, let's actually talk honestly about what the blockages are. The uncertainty in the system stops developers and investments managers putting their money in Ireland, which would actually help them build. Let's make certainty, put certainty in the system. Let's have strategic development for infrastructural needs that are absolutely in the common good because we can't survive without them. Let's make them in, on a different track or on a fast track for our planning system and give bloody money to developers and small businessmen who want to actually build 10 houses.
Here, here.
Like, but sure, that's what's terrifying, Philip, the notion of paying developers.
Sorry, the banks won't lend. We used to have small builders in Ireland up until about maybe 15, 20 years ago that used to build 15 houses here, 50 houses there.
By the way, they did a really good job at that.
Yeah. Mm.
53106 if you want to get in touch, or 087-1400-106. We do need to take a break. Come back, coming up after the break, we'll return briefly to that judicial review and whether or not it is going to make a difference to the problem that the guys are outlining. And also there is the story of Ryanair's refund policy being tested in a particularly emotional way. Now, before the break, we were talking about the judicial review and the fact that the government is, or rather that punters will now have to stump up if they decide to take judicial reviews. Regina, you had given a bit of an impassioned speech about the kind of changes that needed to be made in terms of bureaucracy across European Union, but Ireland at the main point of that. Do you think that that therefore is a step in the right direction, that that will make a significant difference?
I think it will make people think twice when it's their own money that they have to obviously put up. But I'm not of the view that we should stop people allowing make observations or object. Like, I really am. And there was talk in the European Union that there's other countries where you only have one planning. You get your plan and then that's the end of it. Everybody else has to put up or shut up. I don't agree with that. People are entitled to be able to say something impacts me or there's a, you know, a loophole that was missed. You're entitled to do that. What I would love just honestly to see is to have a limit on that. And if this reflects, you know, maybe that somebody has to think twice about putting a kind of a spurious objection in, or we read a lot about NIMBYism where people take judicial reviews to get developers to do something else for them over here. Like, all of that's wrong and it's manipulating a system. We need a system that shouldn't be allowed to be manipulated. We need a system that has certainty, that gives, you know, a real clarity to those people that we need to come with their hundreds of millions of euros to invest in building infrastructure and houses in this country. And a time limit might be a better source of, you know, a fix, as opposed to maybe making people have to think because they haven't got the money to do it. As you said earlier on, the wealthy would be the only people to be able to do it. But something needs to be done. I don't know whether it's the money or whether it's the time limit, but I want to see some action so that we give those people who we need their hundreds of millions of euros to come and invest in Ireland, invest.
Just, you're making me a view on this text. Celtic Tiger, we build 80,000 homes with even more stringent legislation and regulations. Now we're saying that we're only building 35,000 homes, and that's because of legislation and regulation.
I don't know. So the culture of objecting certainly didn't exist in the Celtic Tiger, because at the time, lots of people were buying second houses, either for maybe holidays or to rent out. Yeah. So the culture was slightly different. And that's not to be pointing a finger at anybody, right? But all I know is what's causing or what's an impediment today. And the length of time it takes for people's objections to be heard and adjudicated on is far, far, far too long.
Let us move on to an interesting moral quandary. Philip, I might kick off this with you. This is on the Mail is reporting it on page 13 under the headline, Ryanair won't refund London train attack hero. And this is the story that the passenger who risked his life to stop the knife attack on the London train. This is Stephen Green, 61-year-old Irish citizen. He was stabbed several times last Saturday as he was helping to prevent the attacker getting to other people on the train. Ryanair has refused to refund him and has told him that he should have, because, of course, he missed his flight, what with being hospitalised with stab wounds.
Yeah.
He went to Ryanair and said, listen, hospital, stab wounds. They said, no refund. I told him, you should have taken out travel insurance to avoid losing money.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe Regina might know. There is some European policies about when they do have to pay.
If you get stabbed, you get your money back.
I don't know. Maybe there is a rule out there.
I don't think that comes in the condition. There is consumer rights, absolutely.
But look, this isn't the first time Ryanair have done something like that. I remember a tragic case a few years back, that family who got burnt to death in
in London, was it? I'm not 100% sure. And then the father of the family got stopped and couldn't get a refund as well on his way home to Ireland. So look, it is just our policy. They don't really kind of differentiate between anyone. You're just an ass on a seat, really, to Ryanair. So
they were quoted as saying, Ryanair said, all Ryanair airfares are non-refundable, which is why we strongly recommend passengers take out travel insurance in order to protect themselves.
So first of all, they're absolutely correct. That's the policy. So you'd say, there you go. Anybody with a nose in their face, you think, would make a decision and say, in this circumstance, in this terrible circumstance, let's make an exception and give this guy his flight refund and give him a £200 voucher for his next flight, okay? So it's kind of, you know, technically they're absolutely right and they have every right not to give him his money back. But you'd think that for a commercial organisation, even on the basis, I mean, all Michael Lear's at home, I think, is this great, we're talking about Ryanair on the radio today again, and we haven't even discussed his not resigning or retiring. You know, he's just delighted it's happening. The bottom line is you'd hope that with a bit of cop on and a bit of kind of, you know, understanding as to how this is going to kind of play out, they'd have given us money back and they could be heroes as against here today.
Now, explain this to me, John, because Ryanair has long been driven solely by the commercial imperative.
Correct.
How would it facilitate their commercial imperative to be seen to be slightly nicer? Because nobody buys Ryanair tickets because they're nice.
And that's why they're doing what they do, because we all have been told.
So they're right.
They're absolutely right in what they're doing. They're technically and legally absolutely right.
But they're commercially right as well.
No, I think no.
They're doing right by their shareholders.
Yeah, no, listen, they'll always be right by their shareholder. But also, let's be very clear. We all know, and we've all sucked this up, when you buy a Ryanair flight, you know it's going to be value for money and usually on time and not the greatest experience in the whole wide world. And thank God they don't do long haul, all right? So you buy in for that and you pay for your bag or you get the smallest bag you possibly can, so you know what you're buying into. And they've made that absolutely commercially clear. What I'm saying as an organisation, that on the periphery of whether it's CSR or whether it's giving back to the community, it was a very simple thing to do to provide them, to prevent them from being here on air, being described as this inhumane, appalling organisation.
But you see, I would argue, John, that if you are Michael O'Leary, what you are looking at is you want everybody to understand in letters 30 feet high, we don't refund tickets. And they now have a national radio station effectively spending 6 minutes saying, by the way, lads, Ryanair doesn't refund tickets. That's a win.
No, sorry, it's a win. But by the way, they were technically absolutely right. So there's absolutely no argument in respect. That was the rule. Whether you got burned, stabbed or anything is not our concern. There are the conditions. And by the way, the reason we can provide you with this fantastic service and value for money is that we are ruthless and we kind of save every penny in every corner. So that is where I'm coming from. What I'm saying is that in a human sense, it seems like a kind of a, what potentially was a small issue they could have dealt with has turned into something that, again, is unnecessary.
You know, so John is actually right. So it's the no-frills airline. We've all enjoyed the ability to be able to travel because we're lucky enough to have them at 99.99 or whatever it happens to be. But sometimes
The deregulation of the aviation industry helped a bit as well.
But most people don't know that. They know that they're getting the 19.99 ticket or whatever sales advertisement that we see. There is a thing, though, that does kind of seep into people. A number of weeks ago, there was a flight to Madrid. It was 2 hours late and people were left standing around for ages. And yet when they got up to the desk to go in, they still were being charged 70 quid for their bags. Sorry, have a little bit of self-awareness that if you're after making people stand around for 2 hours being late, don't be charged them 70. Like, and this again is the story that you said, Philip, about the gentleman a couple of years ago. It does seep into, like it leaves a little bit of a bad taste in what should be our best success story in Ireland.
But is that
they
don't care.
A bit triggered, as the young people say, even talking about those that €70 fine that they give you, because your wheel is over on the bag.
Have a bit of self-awareness. Just there's a time and a place. Yes, it is a no-frills airline, and we're hugely proud of the fact that they've are a great Irish success story. But there's a little bit of, you know.
But surely,
let's just mention their lingo just to get some balance
on all of these things. What they think is, if you open the tiniest chink in our armor, to mix a metaphor, the floodgates will open. The same thing. They look and go, the minute we let Philip Ryan get in with his wheel an inch over, suddenly it's 2 inches. No.
They love
it. Absolute lads.
Maybe, I don't know, but, you know.
That's enough.
Look, Mayor, it's not going to stop anybody booking their flights with Ryanair, that's for sure.
A text saying a goodwill gesture from Michael O'Leary's pocket wouldn't make any difference. But again, I think that defeats the purpose. That still says that somewhere there is a heart. Yeah, they want you to know, no, we don't have a heart. We'll finish on something positive. Two-time Jungle participant Helen Flanagan backs Vogue Williams to have what it takes to succeed on the hit ITV show. This is because Joe Vogue is heading into the jungle, and the way we know she's heading into the jungle is because the Mail has mocked up a picture of what she might look like in the jungle. But anyway, even if you don't need the picture evidence, Vogue Williams, I assume, is going. Do we know how much she get paid for stumping up in the jungle? What's the going rate this weather?
Do they not all do it for charity or something like that?
I don't think so. I think this is
hundreds of thousands.
Pages there, Philip. You went too far.
Yeah. I remember Vogue Williams not too far from here. Wasn't that where she came from? Fade Street, the hit reality show from the early
2000s.
Wasn't she in that?
Yes,
I think so. She's done very well for herself.
She's turned herself into this extraordinary business. Yeah. And I understand people who follow her say she's absolutely fabulous. And for an Irish person to get onto the British, I'm a celebrity, get me out of here, it's great for her and her brand and her family. She'll make a fortune. Mm. And she'll probably come home with a suntan and be fit as a fiddle, and it'll be all good. So.
It's also one of those stories of sort of new media, because there is a generation who look at Vogue and go, what do you think she's doing now? And then there is a generation who is absolutely lapping up
every
all the content
she is producing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And she is making a very healthy living off it. Would you do the jungle if you were given the option?
Not on your Nelly.
Strictly?
I'd like to.
I can see you, Regina. The old pasta doble.
Dancing is different, but no, not eating.
Oh, I hope they're listening out in Montreal.
Right. The tech thing, I've just been listening to you speaking about Ryanair for not refunding the gentleman who was stabbed recently on the train in London. If they wanted some good press, or at least a way of avoiding bad press, and I'm not sure they do, Michael O'Leary could just choose to give him a gift voucher for his good deeds, but not call it a refund for the flight. Otherwise, every person who has bad luck in their day and misses their flight would then be looking for a refund. Yeah. The conditions of travel are the same for everyone. And another, Anton, you are doing the devil's work by giving airtime to an airline that spends all the way to doing the devil's work.
Oh my God.
There's power, Anton.
Joe, interesting thing I was reading a while ago. You know Southwest Airlines, which is the airline that Ryanair
the whole thing,
on. When they were originally trying to sell tickets, there was a floor of tickets. You couldn't sell below, I think it was something like $20 a ticket. So they came up with a thing where they would sell a ticket for $21 and give you a free bottle of whiskey, which was worth $30. So you ended up almost making money off the flight. There was a period when Southwest Airlines were the biggest distributor of alcohol in the southern United States. Everybody went home with their extra bottle of booze. Another, I traveled to Spain with Ryanair last month with my adult son with complex disabilities, and they treated him with such understanding and kindness, and even invited him to meet the pilot in the cockpit. He was absolutely made up, and it was a rare and heartwarming experience for me too.
Bravo. Fair play to them.
That stunned silence for niceness being named in the same category. Guys, thank you all very much. All right, John, tell us about Emma. Come on. You said you wanted to tell something to come up with Emma.
Well, no, for the weekend it's here. Emma.
I'm not posh enough for Emma, John.
You don't have to be posh. And actually, you need to go up the Art of Agency, Cecilia Vicuna, and the Sam Gillingham exhibition. It's for free. It's a fantastic day out. Get the Lewis, get the bus. And if you're nothing else doing today, Emma's the place to be.
And say you sent me and you get VIP treatment.
Well, listen, I'll bring you up and we get you your lunch anyhow.
Thank you very much, guys. John Cunningham, Marketing Insights Director for BAM Ireland. Philip Ryan, Head of Content with the Sunday Times Ireland. And Regina Doherty, MEP for Dublin.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.